Good morning. Today we will present a new podcast in the framework of the Word Package 2 of the European project China Horizons, dealing with the research in China. Word Package 2 is dedicated to the analysis of the development of Chinese society and culture, and more specifically Sciences Po, because we have three teams working in the Word Package 2, one in the University of Madrid and the other one in the University of Social Sciences in Warsaw. Here in Sciences Po, we are more focusing to the studies of the opinions of the Chinese people. We will be three people here talking about, we will see that, you know, work in China and the views of work in China, in the more specifically in social media. Me, my name is Jean-Louis Roca, I'm in charge of the World Package 2, and Camille Salle, who is working here with us on the Sciences Po, in the Sciences Po team, and Tang Lingyue, who is also a member of this team. What is important to mention is that against the mainstream approach of Chinese society, which considers that the Communist Party controlled the ideological and political spheres, there is no interest in knowing the opinion of Chinese people, except those who advocate political change. Here in Sciences Po, in this team, we try precisely to focus on the opinion of Chinese people, because we consider that it is very important to take into account this aspect of the Chinese society. We will focus today on social media, but we will mention another method at a certain point of the discussion, because we are using also interviews. We're conducting interviews to find out the opinions of the Chinese people. Today we will focus on social media, but we will occasionally mention that what we learn from interviews, and we will see that it is very much in line with what we can find on the social media. Today it is a specific topic, because we will have the opportunity to do other podcasts concerning other aspects of our work, for example, education of gender. But today we will focus on work, because it is probably one of the most emblematic topic of the debate now on the social media. And we will see that despite the censorship, we can say a lot of things on social media about work.
Today I'm asking the questions. So first, maybe for Lingyue. So what are people talking about today in China in the social networks when it comes to work?
Yes, just as Jean-Louis just presented, work has always been a focal point of attention for Chinese society. In recent years, several recurring topics have emerged, giving rise to numerous buzzwords. For instance, you may have heard of the 996 work schedule, where employees are required to work from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. 6 days a week, amounting to at least 72 working hours per week. This reflects a severe culture of overwork. Well, in my personal research on doctors, I found that due to severe staffing shortages in grassroots hospitals and the impact of shift systems, some doctors work over 100 hours a week. Another term, originally academic, has entered popular discourse: involution, neijuan. It describes the meaningless and relentless competition in workplaces, often leading to a widespread sense of burnout. In response to this involution crisis, some have chosen to lie flat, tangping, or let it rot, bai lan. People may have different interpretations of lying flat, but its original slogan was to maintain the lowest possible standard for living. Don't consume, don't get married, don't have children. And some have considered this as a form of resistance. Beyond these buzzwords, there are other work-related issues that remain hot topics of discussion, such as workplace inequality, including gender discrimination, the glass ceiling for women, age discrimination, and limited opportunities for workers from rural areas. In recent years, the employment difficulties faced by young people have also taken center stage.
About that, we've been hearing a lot this word recently, 空一机. Can you tell us more about it?
Yeah, sure, because I'm really happy that you are interested in this term, because I think its emergence and the subsequent discussions it sparked are really interesting. The term 空一集 literature, 空一集文学, refers to a wave of online writings and discussions among young people in China. They draw on the character 空一集 from Lu Xun's renowned short story to voice their frustrations and despair over socioeconomic challenges. 空一集 is a poor intellectual. The story is set in a tavern where customers are divided into two groups. The upper class in long gowns, who always sit and eat their food and drink, and the lower class, who have no seats and can only stand and drink, usually wearing short shirts that are convenient for their labors. While 空一集 was the only customer who wore a long gown and drank his wine standing. He's poor, but always proud of his status as an intellectual, which makes him the object of mockery in the tavern. This novel is included in many middle school textbooks and widely known throughout the country. Well, in early March 2023, the topic 空一集 literature became a trending topic on Weibo, with the tagline, "If I hadn't gone to college, I would be content to work in a factory, but there are no ifs." Well, under this topic, countless young people express confusion and disappointment about their struggles to find jobs aligned with their expectations, despite holding higher education degrees. Some noteworthy comments include, "They say education is a stepping stone, but I gradually realized it is also a high platform I cannot come down from. It is like 空一集's long gown that he could never remove. And when I first read the story of 空一集 as a child, I didn't understand the meaning. Now I realize that I am 空一集 himself." 空一集 literature might have remained a form of self-parody among young people, but it drew the attention of state media, which sought to reshape the narrative. On March 15th, the Communist Youth League published an article on its official WeChat account titled "Why I Don't Like 空一集 Literature," and on March 16th, CCTV released an article titled "Facing the Anxiety Behind 空一集 Literature." Both articles urged college graduates to take off their long gowns, arguing that 空一集's tragedy is caused by the intellectual's pride and refusal to change through labor, well, which is definitely not the original meaning of Lu Xun's work. The state media's reaction sparked widespread discontent among young people. Social media platforms were flooded with posts and comments criticizing the condescending tone of state media. Many saw this as an attempt to deflect systemic issues, and some pointing out the shrinking avenues for upward social mobility. Some even accused that the state media, and by extension the government, of gaslighting young people. Another famous fictional character, Luo Tuo Xiangzi, Xiangzi the Camel, was frequently referenced in these discussions. Xiangzi is considered as 空一集 without his long gowns, and also engaged in manual work. He suffers lifelong exploitations. In addition, I would like to add a little bit of background of the unemployment situation of young people in China. The term 空一集 literature emerged against the backdrop of a worsening employment crisis for Chinese youth. Well, since 2018, China has tracked the unemployment rate among urban youth aged 16 to 24. This metric reached a peak of 21.3% in June 2023. In August, the National Bureau of Statistics announced that it will suspend the publication of the latest data on the youth unemployment rate from that month. But 4 months later, it began to publish the unemployment rates of the labor force in urban areas across the country for those aged 16 to 24 and 25 to 29 who were not enrolled in schools. According to the latest published data, the unemployment rates for these two categories were 17.1% and 6.8% in October this year. And the number of college students, college graduates this year has likewise reached another record high of 11.79 million. Unemployment among young people is becoming a more and more pressing issue, and related to this, there are a lot of discussions about vocational schools and short-term jobs, internships, and other topics on Chinese social media.
And at the other end of the age spectrum, retirement is also becoming an issue, right?
Yes, it is. And because facing the rapid aging of China's population and the pension funding crisis, the Chinese government has been discussing the extension of the retirement age for many years. On 13 September this year, the Standing Committee of the National People's Congress announced a decision on gradually raising the retirement age in the country. In fact, this is the first time China has raised its retirement age since the 1950s. The reform will start to go into effect in January 1st, 2025, and the retirement age will gradually rise from 60 to 63 for men, from 50 to 55 for women in manual jobs, and from 55 to 58 for women employed in offices. And of course, the announcement sparked widespread discussion across Chinese social media. Some people believe that this reform is quite mild and offers flexibility. However, many others have raised concerns. Just as we mentioned earlier about the issue of youth unemployment, given the current challenges in China's labor market, people may not even have jobs when the time comes. This concern stems from the prevalence of age discrimination in China's workplace. Many companies, particularly in tech industry, hold a strong bias against job seekers over the age of 35. And similarly, some argue that the current labor market is not experiencing a shortage of workers, but rather a shortage of positions. Delayed retirement could further reduce employment opportunities for younger generation. There is also an interesting comment that summarizes, and I quote, the rejected life of Chinese people. It says, too few newborns, too many college graduates, workers over 35 are considered too old, and retiring at 60 is considered too early. In addition, I found it quite interesting that the new reform continues to distinguish between male and female workers. Earlier in this year, in February, there was a trending topic on Weibo when the distinguished professor at Peking University's National Development Institute proposed that women's retirement age should also be 10 to 60. Well, people debated this issue, such as gender discriminations, the glass ceiling for women, and the common practice of questioning female job candidates about their marital and parental status. Others discussed the caregiving burden many women bear within families. Well, in China, many middle-aged and elderly women are responsible for looking after their grandchildren. So delayed retirement is indeed a significant issue. However, I think it's also a global concern, and I believe there's a considerable room for comparison here.
Yes, exactly. Jean-Louis, are these questions debated in China any different from those discussed in Europe, for example?
Yeah, we see that some topics are very different from from France, you know. And for example, the discussion about Kongyiji literature is very specific to China, because we have here reference to a very important person and a lot of debate in the 20s and the 30s of the last century about precisely the change in China and the complete reshaping of employment and education in China at that time. But we see that some points, you know, we have very common discussions and debates about, for example, retirement and about youth employment. And here, through that, we can see that finally, basically, we have China is very close to developed countries. Of course, you know, China likes to be viewed as a developing countries, but many points we have the same kind of problems we can find out in developed countries. Retirement, of course, is a very, very, very important element because employment now is a big problem for China. Not only, of course, in terms of retirement, but in terms of youth employment. And of course, it is not without connection with what we said about Tangbing, Neijuan, all these kind of what we can call cultural movements of cultural waves taking a very big role in China in the time being. Which is also very interesting to remark that the debates we have now in China are very congruent with what we found in the interviews of Chinese people living in France. I mentioned at the beginning that it was another method we are using to know more about what the Chinese are thinking, you know, in the time being. And what is interesting with the Chinese people living in France is that they could compare the situation in China and in France. And for many, many of these people who are, you know, students with not a lot of experience, you know, concerning work, but a little bit of experience because they are, for example, doing some internship in France, and they know what is going on, of course, in China. But more importantly, people working and living in China for years sometimes, keeping relationships with their family, of course, of China, and looking at what is working, what is happening in China. It is very interesting to see the view they have in terms of comparison between China and France. And basically, you know, very important to notice that for them, the situation to work in France is better than to work in China. And for example, students at the end of the when they are graduated and they think about what kind of job they would like to do, a lot of people say, okay, for the time being, I would prefer to work in France to get a good job in France if it's possible, rather than that going back to China. What are the main points they are focusing on to explain why they would prefer to a certain extent to work in France than to work in China? The main point is about the working conditions, I would say, that we are working less hours in France. We have more holidays, of course. The boss gives people in charge are giving more responsibility to employees. There is less competition between people as well to get the best job and to, I would say, to have the best opportunity in terms of promotion and improvement in their place in the organization. The role of trade unions, etc. And the you know, to a certain extent, the atmosphere in the French companies are viewed as very, very positively, as we say, compared to China. Of course, some people remarks that efficiency is better in China. That is easy to solve problems sometimes in China because people are working at night, they're working all the time to a certain extent, including the weekends and holidays. But it is not the main point, I would say, which is raised in interviews we conducted in France. And Roughly speaking, I would say that we have a sort of European model emerging here in the discussion we have with we had with people working Chinese people working or living in France. So that, you know, here we have a sort of civilized way of working to a certain extent, and that is really a big gap in terms of comparison with what is the situation in China in the time being.
Okay, but to come back to the social networks, there is one important word when we speak about China, usually it's censorship. So, Lingyue, can the Chinese actually talk about these subjects or not?
Well, this is a question that I've been thinking about for a long time. Because when discussing Chinese social media, we always have to talk about censorship. Sometimes censorship appears completely arbitrary. Certain topics can be discussed while others cannot, and certain comments are allowed under some accounts, but not under others. It's common to see expressions of surprise on social media, such as, "Is this even allowed?" or "I can't believe this has been posted." Well, conversely, when something is censored, we often say that, okay, the comments have been harmonized, which is to be deleted. Well, from my personal observation, online criticism directed at local governments and central authorities often receives different treatment. Well, for example, in April this year, and there was an incident in Jinan, Shandong province. It was at a school, and three drunk outsiders harassed a female student, leading to a confrontation where three male students intervened. However, one of these male students was criminally detained on suspicions of intentional injury. Following this, many netizens flooded the official Weibo account of the Jinan Public Security Bureau, voicing support for the detained boy and accusing the Bureau of protecting crimes and ignoring justice. In fact, when I checked the Bureau's official account yesterday, these critical comments were still there. They were still present. And the comment section has not been closed. Well, it is a common practice following heavy criticism. Of course, some comments may have been deleted. But in contrast, we can return to the example of retirement reform mentioned earlier. Discussions about delayed retirement have sparked at least three notable waves of debate this year. In February, when the expert proposed extending women's retirement age to 60, of course, many people were targeted the expert personally, and commenters accused the expert of being out of touch with public realities and questioned their data. But beyond that, broader discussions about delaying retirement emerged. There were complaints and dissatisfaction. They were still visible in the comment sections. And in July, an online rumor claimed that all the millennial must retire at 65. People joked in the comments about working until they are elderly, with some highly upvoted remarks suggesting that such rumors were actually tests of public opinions by the government. Again, these comments remained visible. However, in September, after the formal policy was announced, comments on the official and major media accounts only showed support and thumbs up. There were no jokes, no complaints. And people continue to find creative ways to express themselves. In fact, we've learned lots of techniques to evade censorship, such as using misspelled words or pinyin to bypass sensitive terms, and others turn text into images, flip the images, or draw lines on the images. Some pretend to be discussing issues in other countries to emphasize that we are definitely not talking about China. As I mentioned earlier, jokes play a significant role. People create memes, share humorous takes, and to talk about the current events. Even Kong Yiji, whom we mentioned earlier, is sort of a way of avoiding censorship because we are referencing a classic character created by Lu Xun, and Lu Xun holds an esteemed position in Chinese culture. Mao Zedong once called him the greatest saint and compared him to Confucius. So how could one censor such a figure?
Thank you very much.
I would like to add a point on that very interesting description of what is going on social media. The fact that you mentioned the fact, Ling Yue, that you know, it is important for it is very different the criticism aiming the central government and the local government. And it is interesting to remark that finally now social media are a means to control what is going on at grassroots level to a certain extent, because it is very difficult for the central government to know exactly what is going on in many places in China. And it is also a way to managing in a better way, as we say, what is going on at local level, and to change the way we say the way the local government is dealing with the people. Then it is important to mention that the role from the point of view of the administration and the government of China in China, the importance of the social media precisely to govern more efficiently, as we say, the population at grassroots level.
Thank you very much. Maybe one last question. Duarte, dealing with a resurgent China, is a European project, right? So how does this, all the things we discussed today, how does this matter for Europeans and for the European Commission?
The fact that the European model, I don't know if I can use this expression, but maybe that's, you know, expressing the way most Chinese people living in France are viewing for the time being, you know, the situation of work in Europe. I think it's very important for the European Commission and the Europe in general to take into account this situation. I think we have now the conditions to promote a sort of European model, you know, and to explain to the Chinese society that we have very different way to deal with working conditions, the relationships, you know, between employers in European companies, etc. I don't want to say that it is perfect, of course, in Europe, and that is very, very bad in China. But if we compare the situation, and it is not me as a European citizen who is saying that, but the Chinese people themselves say that finally they are a European model concerning work is probably better than the Chinese model. And here there is maybe a leverage for sort of soft power action, as we say, to show that there are very positive points in Europe in the time being. The second point, I think, could be that this situation, what people are saying, you know, on social media and during the interviews we conducted, could lead to attract more qualified Chinese people, because finally these people and the high qualified, and we know there is a sort of competition now to attract the best employees and the best researchers, you know, in the world, and that could be a stake for Europe to attract more people with this reputation to have better working conditions in Europe. Finally, I would like to notice that we have a lot of conflict with China on many points. But here, as Yui mentioned, the existence of common problems like retirement problems, how to deal with retirement now in Europe and in China, how to deal with youth employment in China and Europe. Maybe the fact was we have common problems could lead to the organization of a sort of type or another of cooperation and discussion between people dealing with these problems, both in Europe and in China.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for this podcast, and we'll probably do more podcasts in the near future about different aspects of what we can find on social media in China. Thank you.